From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. And on this day, the conflict between Portland and Governor Paul LePage flares up again over claims that Portland uses state money to give illegal immigrants general assistance. And we will meet some of the oldest Mainers. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Pretty nasty out today in a lot of the state as high winds, rain, sleet, and snow were all part of the picture in the nor'easter that forced hundreds of cancellations and produced some minor power outages. AJ Higgins has the snowy detail.
The freezing rain and sleet coincided with the daily commute of many Mainers, and speeds on major highways were dropped as the roads iced over. At Maine Department of Transportation headquarters, spokesman Ted Talbot advised drivers of all stripes to be patient and use caution on the highway as they approach state snowplow trucks.
You'd be much better off following the plow rather than trying to pass the plow, because of course the road in back of the plow is much better than in front.
Icing conditions are expected to continue throughout much of the state over the evening. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm AJ Higgins.
Portland Mayor Ethan Strimling hit back today at Governor Paul LePage for not backing up his claim that the city is misusing state funds by providing welfare to illegal immigrants. Steve Missler has more.
Strimling says the governor didn't provide, quote, a shred of evidence to back his claims that the city is breaking state law.
The Maine people did not buy in to you breaking the laws, and Portland in particular was the leader of breaking the laws.
But Strimling says the governor's remarks to Bangor radio station WVOM directly contradict what his own administration has told the city. The dust-up rekindles long-standing tensions between the Republican governor and a liberal city that provides assistance to immigrants seeking asylum. LePage's claims come as he's attempting to justify a cut of roughly $14 million from the state's general assistance program. The program helps cities and towns provide cash assistance to poor residents. State law allows some legal immigrants seeking political asylum to receive benefits. Portland also provides assistance to immigrants who haven't yet applied for asylum, but the city says its assistance to those immigrants is not drawn from state funds. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
It's scallop season in Maine. Maine fishermen have hauled in more than 450,000 pounds of the tender delicacy in each of the last 3 years. But the state produces only a tiny fraction of the entire U.S. sea scallop harvest. So to grow a market for its own brand of inshore scallops, the Maine industry is trying to sell one particular quality that sets it apart. Caroline Losneck has this story.
Just offshore from the Cousins Island town dock in Casco Bay, Alex Todd and his crew, Levi Glodin and Edward LaFieber, are shelling scallops on Todd's boat, the Jacob and Joshua.
We get rid of the stomach and the mantle and all that, and just put the abductor muscle in the bucket.
Todd is one of more than 600 licensed scallop fishermen in Maine, of which about 450 are active. He's been harvesting scallops for almost 30 years and chairs the Scallop Advisory Council, a panel that makes recommendations about the fishery. In Maine, a few dozen fishermen dive underwater in scuba gear to harvest scallops by hand, but the majority of scallops in the state are harvested by draggers, like Todd.
We tow the dredge. We call it drag. The federal government calls it a scallop dredge across the bottom. There's chains on it that tickle the top of the bottom and flip the scallops up into the link bag, which we tow a couple hundred yards behind the boat, depending on the depth of the water. And after, say, 15 minutes, we haul it back, see how many scallops are in it, dump it out, and start over.
Lobster is Todd's main focus, but like many Maine fishermen, he also catches groundfish and shrimp when they're around and there's a season for them. And as for scallops, Todd says Maine's inshore harvest has a special appeal.
You can see that they're still flipping, they're alive. We bring them in that day within hours, don't soak them in anything. They just couldn't get any fresher. Usually when you move them, you can feel them pulsate.
Most of what Todd and his crew haul in gets hand-delivered to customers, right to their house or restaurant. But some go to dealers.
Down East Day Boat is my company at which I try to differentiate the superior nature of Maine scallops.
Togue Braun's company focuses only on Maine day boat scallops, the kind harvested and brought to shore in the same day by fishermen like Alex Todd. Braun drives up and down the Maine coast buying scallops directly from fishermen and ships them to customers within 24 hours. Everything gets labeled with the name of the fisherman that caught them, the bay they're from, and the date.
They're coming from waters that produce exceptionally flavored scallops. Just like oysters develop flavor profiles depending on where they grow, so do scallops, but most people don't realize that because they're used to the waterlogged scallops from, you know, generic offshore waters.
Maine scallops only account for about 2% of all sea scallops in the U.S. The rest come from the federal fishery, mostly from offshore waters near Georgia's Bank, and are brought in by large boats that go out for a week or so at a time, catching thousands of pounds per trip.
There is a huge difference between a Maine scallop and a scallop from the federal fishery. Absolutely huge. So if you can show that difference to more people, then they realize, oh, wow, like Maine waters do produce something better. Maine fishermen have a better way of bringing in their catch.
Alex Todd agrees.
A lot of the big days at sea boats, you'll get a 8, 10, 12-day-old scallop before it reaches land. Plus, a lot of places soak them in some sort of solution to keep them fresher smelling, and they add weight to it.
He's talking about TSP, or trisodium phosphate, an additive that often gets used on scallops so they absorb more liquid, increasing their weight. Dana Temple owns Crescent Bay, a wholesale seafood company.
If you want to get the most out of the Maine fishery, you've got to separate it from the rest of the fisheries out there. You've got to market it from a standpoint of what it is, a dayboat fishery that's traceable right to the source.
By differentiating Maine scallops from the rest of the harvest, Braun is hoping to build a market that can sustain the state's fishery.
You know, Maine's fishery is very small. It is a few hundred boats coming in with very small amounts of scallops at the far right-hand corner of the country.
Braun admits that her company's impact on getting more consumers to recognize how special Maine's fishery is remains small, for now.
I cannot buy enough to make a big difference. I make a small difference to a small number of fishermen, and I hope to grow that.
Recently, fishermen were earning about $13.50 a pound for scallops. That's more than three times the price they got in 2004. And Braun says Maine scallop fishermen should be getting paid for what she calls a super premium product. For now, she pays fishermen like Todd as much as $18.
If the price was still $7, or even at one point it was $4.50, you know, it just wouldn't be worth going with the price of fuel and everything the way it is. Yeah.
Both Alex Todd and Tobe Braun have seen the state fishery rebuild since scallop landings collapsed to an historical low in 2005. Landings have improved, in part, due to measures imposed by regulators. But challenges, warming ocean temperatures and acidification due to climate change, still loom for the fishery.
So we have a state water fishery because our scallops can live within 3 miles of our shore. To our south, by and large, the waters close to shore get too hot in the summer. So if our waters warm up too much, then that could be bad, especially for the western part of the state.
Meantime, Maine's industry will continue to work on its brand. Oh, and in case you're wondering, let's set the record straight on how the word scallop is pronounced.
Well, I say scallop.
Mainers call them scallops, and everybody else calls them scallops, which I find really annoying. There's another L there. It's S-C-A-L-L, scallop.
I don't know which one's right, but I'm going to say scallop.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caroline Losnick.
The oldest among us are getting older. According to the 20 census, nearly 2 million people were age 90 or above, and that number is expected to quadruple by 2050. It's among the fastest growing segments of the population. At one independent living community in Portland, there are so many nonagenarians that they have formed a club as part of our series that focuses on older Mainers called In This Life. Patty White paid the Nine Decades group a visit.
If you want to find the Nine Decades group, head over to the Cedars Retirement Community in Portland on the first Monday of the month and listen for this. 24 residents here are age 90 and above. When they meet for the Nine Decades group, they sit in a circle and joke about what else? Age.
First time I felt old was my daughter went on Medicare.
The members of the club, which formed last year, have a common bond, says 90-year-old Paul Corpella. They've achieved something that many of them never expected.
It's a bunch of us that wonder about each other, to a certain extent as to, at 90, how come you're still here?
The members of the Nine Decades group have outlived friends, some have outlived spouses, even some of their children. As they navigate their ninth decade, Les Brewer, the group's current leader, is in search of a larger mission. He encourages members to submit their DNA to a databank to help answer questions about longevity. He also suggests that the group create a how-to guide for younger people.
So that we could teach them how to come along and attain the age of 90. So please think of how you have done it, how you would suggest other people might follow and do it.
I don't know, probably good scotch, good life.
Elaine Adams is 91. She just moved into the Cedars about a year ago.
I've had a positive attitude. I don't worry about much, never have, and I just go with the flow.
Attitude. You have to have a correct attitude. You avoid depression, and there's quite a bit of it around here, but you avoid it by socializing with people, and it's much easier at our age to socialize with people your own age.
I would like it better if it was a mixed community of all ages, because I miss seeing little ones.
Harriet Bogdanoff is 94. She thinks genetics play a role in her longevity because her mom lived to be 92. Attitude is also important, she says, but that doesn't mean she gladly accepts whatever comes her way.
How would you describe this stage of life compared to other stages?
That's a hard one, because it's taken me a long time to accept my limitations.
To be sure, Bogdanoff keeps very busy. She takes classes at a local university. She swims and does yoga. But she has had to give some things up. She uses a walker now and recently decided that she can't travel anymore. That means she can't visit her lifelong friends she left behind in New Jersey. But she says, you have to move on.
It's a matter of accepting one's limitations gracefully and still appreciating what life has to offer. And that's what I tell myself every day.
Along with the physical changes, these 90-somethings say they also contend with changes in their relationships, even, says Paul Corpella, from well-meaning family members.
They get very protective of you, and you start reverting back to childhood kind of thing. Dad, don't get up. You know, I'll get your water for you. Don't get up. You know, I'll get the paper for you. And I should be getting up. You should get up and move and every hour.
You're old and they don't want sometimes to listen because you're just plain old. Oh, Nana, I don't want to hear that. No, you know.
But the passage of time has also helped to strengthen family relationships. Harriet Bogdanoff moved here to be physically closer to her daughter, but now they're closer in other respects.
Closer in terms of how we think about one another and how we like the same things and how we can relate to one another as equals. And that's special.
Bogdanoff has already had to say goodbye to her husband and one of her daughters. The losses are painful. But death, she says, is a part of life.
My father died when I was 12. Yeah, so that was a hard one for me. But I was introduced to death early on because of that. And so I had no feeling of being immortal. And I knew that when my time was up, it would be up. And I'm ready to join my husband.
You have to realize that why you're here, to put it bluntly, we came here to die.
I put that in the background. I lived as long as I could live. I never thought of dying.
Well, I'm curious. I'm more curious than anything else. I mean, what's it like? Who was it, the Apple guy that just died?
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs. They claim that as he was going, he all of a sudden says, wow. And I'm very curious as to why he said, wow.
Well, we know it's going to happen. It happens to everybody. And I think the biggest problem for me, having lived as long as I have, you just can't pick the time or pick the way it will happen.
That seems to be the biggest worry, not dying itself, but the potential for mental or physical deterioration. Still, Les Brewer, Elaine Adams, Harriet Bogdanoff, and Paul Corpella choose not to dwell on it.
I don't feel there's any bad parts of living in your 90s. In my particular case, it's always an opportunity to do something, either for the community or for others, that I get the most satisfaction from.
To be honest, aging does stink, you know, but what can you do? You're going to age, you're here, you're lucky you're here if you're in fairly good health, and I think that's something to be very happy and proud about.
I feel lucky to be alive.
I feel wonderful. I'm having a blast. I'm one of those happy ones. Attitude. That's the secret. That's always the secret, regardless of how old you are.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin, Susan Sharon, and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.